Our next case today is number 063224, the United States against Dale. Mr. Brandt.
May it please the court, Mr. Norwood. My name is Jeff Brandt, representing Jason Dale. Thank you for oral argument. I want to note for the panel that the family and dear friends of Jason are present, and also appreciate the time for oral argument. We've submitted four arguments, two of which, time permitting and based upon the court's question, we are hoping to focus on this morning. One is challenging the obstruction enhancement, and the other is the reasonableness of the sentence, including the district court's findings that it did not have authority under law to grant a, quote, downward departure or non-guideline sentence, and then the denial of that request in light of the undisputed facts of the case and the law, and not just the guidelines, but 3553A and 3661. Overall, we submit this as a good but unfortunate example of the law, both the guidelines and the statutory sentencing factors, failing to achieve the justice that you hope it would achieve. Although no one disputes that Jason exhibited some bad post-defense conduct related to an unaddressed alcohol problem, he had made what can only be called an amazing turnaround when it comes to the offense and his reaction to that offense when it comes to the much more difficult problem he had, and that is methamphetamine. As to the obstruction, the questions here are, what's bad conduct? What's obstructive conduct? And then what's obstructive conduct that rises to the level of impeding or attempting to impede the administration of justice? The Seventh Circuit Pollard case makes clear obstruction enhancements do not apply to any and all obstructive conduct. And the Scott case we cited shows that, look, it can be the most offensive conduct in the world, but it's not, if it's not going to affect the case against the defendant, it's not obstruction of justice. Here we have Jason, and the person that the evidence before the district court caused the district court to find made a threat against, and that person wears several hats at the same time. Maria Winchester is his cousin, but also someone with whom he's had problems in the past because she had a problem with his sister and his brother-in-law, whereas Maria took his sister's identification and used it to get illegal drugs. So they have a history. And then three, yes, she's a potential witness. The district court's answer to this question, which both parties agree is the focus, can be found in the sentencing transcript, pages 152 and 153, five paragraphs. In those five paragraphs, the district court fails to note that Ms. Winchester is wearing more than one hat, only focuses on the fact she's a potential witness, focused on whether the threat was made at all, and essentially spends three or four paragraphs talking about, did the threat occur? That's not a question here, whether the threat occurred. And it focused on the credibility of Ms. Winchester. And again, if the district court's finding the threat occurred, that's not a question. Only at the end does the district court say, I find Jason said it, and therefore this is obstruction. And that's where we submit the error occurred. Just because he said it, just because there's a threat, does not mean it affected the administration of justice. And then in the second paragraph of those five paragraphs, the district court said, anytime anyone states to a potential witness a threat, that's obstruction. And we submit that might be obstructive behavior, that might be obstructive conduct, but that's not anything that intends to affect the administration of justice.
Mr. Brandt, help me with this, please, sir. Even if a threat is unrelated to her status as a cooperating witness, when someone threatens a witness, even for a reason that's unrelated to her status as a witness. Is it implausible to think that the threat may make the witness more reluctant to continue cooperating with the government?
Absolutely not. Of course it's not implausible. But I think we're arguing that the record has to show that that was the reason. And I think what we have here is zero evidence saying that's the reason. And all the evidence, the record showing, is that it had something to do with a past relationship. Even the threat says this time, and I hate to use the words, but I'm going to kill you. Not, I'm tired of you doing something that's going to get me in trouble. This time, there's a time A, a time B, a time C, a history of problems. Not any statement. Both witnesses that heard the threat admitted nothing about the case, nothing about please don't say anything to police officers, please don't discuss anything. It arises after an argument that occurs in a restaurant after a manager of the restaurant refuses to believe or even listen to their side of the story. Maybe snitch and, excuse me, bitch were used, but the evidence against shows nobody can say that it came from Jason's mouth or even relates to Ms. Winchester. She may have a heightened sense of alarm because these people in the restaurant. And again, they thought she wasn't going to be in the restaurant. They didn't see her car outside. They thought she wasn't going to be there that day. They go in there. They see she's there. The two people they're meeting are there, so they sit down. Those two people are going to finish their drinks, and they're going to leave.
Do you think that your perceived problems with these statements were what were the impetus for Judge Gilbert to give Mr. Dale the three-level reduction for acceptance of responsibility, notwithstanding, of course, the finding that he had obstructed justice?
I can only
say that's pretty unusual.
I can only
you know, you obstructed justice, but I'm going to give you a three-level downward reduction.
Yeah, I'm seeing it more and more. That's not something that's in the record. I'm seeing more and more that judges are saying, well, I see this here, I see this here. And I think my experience is, this isn't in the record, that district courts are saying, this is what 3C1.1 says, and here's what acceptance says, so I'm going to deal with them differently. Your Honor, I have to say I don't know. Is that possible? Yes. But if all these decisions are being made on the language of the guidelines and what the facts are behind them, I can only say that I see acceptance because Jason admitted fully everything that has to do with methamphetamine and what his offense was when it came to methamphetamine and the turnaround he did with methamphetamine. Simply has an unaddressed alcohol problem that's not related to the offense, that wasn't addressed. That was a huge mistake that nobody can run from, that we're not going to hide from. It's not related. Is it related, you know, genetically in his proteins? Probably. In his brain? Probably. But not with the offense. I can't say that Judge Gilbert isn't trying to make amends or balance, but I think the appropriate thing for any judge is to decide, does this part of the guidelines apply based upon these facts and this law? And if obstruction doesn't, because there's no relation in the evidence to trying to affect the case, we can't have an obstruction enhancement. And to the same token, to our potential detriment, if someone hasn't accepted responsibility, we can't give them that. But I think in this case, we have facts that show complete acceptance when it comes to the offense and related offenses, or related conduct, excuse me, and we have a situation where the facts that were presented. Now, maybe there's additional facts, but again, as we point out in the brief, the district court doesn't address
He got the acceptance of responsibility adjustment.
Yes.
And as to the obstruction adjustment, the evidence supports, does it not, that the context of this threat was the current bad blood between these two, which was related to her having informed on him after the jacket incident, right?
I don't think so. I think, remember who's sitting with him at the table. His brother-in-law, Matt, car. It's his brother-in-law and his sister are the ones that had the cause for the case against Ms. Winchester when she went to prison.
She used her ID, the sister's ID.
Correct. But
the other part of the context was the jacket incident where your client tried to get rid of some evidence by foisting it on Ms. Winchester at this pasta house. It seems to be the site of all the problems here.
It seems to be the nice place to go or the place that in town people hang out.
Right, but that's how she came into possession of the jacket with the evidence and called the police, and then he called her. And I mean, that's the current bad blood between these two. There may have been other bad blood, but that's the current bad
at
blood.
At worst, I say the bad blood is mixed. But when we look at the evidence, the only overlap between what happened in the past and this day is the place and the people. Nothing's mentioned about, you know, I can't believe you did that about the jacket. I can't believe that you've turned me in. It's simply, we've got a problem in the past. I've come here again. I haven't done anything wrong. I am not coming after you. I tried to explain that to a manager. She won't listen. I've taken my anger out on the manager. I storm out, and then he says the threat. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear now from Mr. Norwood for the government.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. This defendant threatened to kill a federal witness, a potential federal witness. Judge Gilbert said there is no more obstructive conduct than that. The government certainly agrees.
What if the facts reveal that a defendant has threatened a witness for reasons entirely unrelated to the person's status as a witness? You know, I mean, like, suppose that a witness is a defendant's former wife, and they're fighting over the custody of the kids, and he says, "I'll get you." Is that type of threat entirely unrelated to her status as a cooperating witness? Is that obstruction of justice?
It depends on why I agree it depends on why the threat was stated. But there are some reasons it's impossible to tell whether it's because of the person's status as a family member or a status as a potential witness. In this case, Your Honors, I would suggest the government contends that it's because she was a potential federal witness. And I would direct your attention not only to Ms. Winchester's testimony at the sentencing hearing, but also Vicki Niles, who was the manager of the Pasta House restaurant, who heard the statements, and I'm not going to use the whole statement, but F you, bitch, and then narc. Well, what is the word narc going to? If he is yelling narc at Maria Winchester, that is not with respect to a family dispute. That is with respect to her cooperating with law enforcement against him. And she also recalled him saying the words snitch. What does that go to? That doesn't go to a family relationship. That goes to her status as a potential witness. If they got into a car accident and he said, "Why'd you run into your car into me?" that has nothing to do with her status as a federal witness. But if you're calling her a narc, if you're calling her a snitch, and you say, "This time I'm going to kill you," that is a threat being made in this context to a potential federal witness. And Judge Gilbert did not clearly err when he made that determination. With respect to whether or not it affected the outcome of the sentencing hearing, I don't think we can look in hindsight and determine whether or not if you threaten a federal witness and they still have the courage to testify, then it is not obstructive behavior because they ended up testifying anyways. You have to look at the threat at the time it was made. Ms. Winchester was fearful. She had other people go get her car from the parking lot. She called home before she left the restaurant to let her family know, "I am leaving the restaurant now, and if I'm not home soon, something's happened to me." That is the act of a fearful lady who wants to make sure she gets home safely because this defendant threatened her. And with respect to the acceptance of responsibility, I submit, and I've been in front of Judge Gilbert for now almost 9 years, I submit Judge Gilbert was showing a little bit of compassion to this young man. That's the only thing I can submit, because the 180 months is a deserved sentence, and I think Judge Gilbert saying adding three more levels to that, I don't think Judge Gilbert wanted to do that, and just out of compassion and being a kind man. But the sentence was reasonable. I know that if Mr. Brandt did not make it to that part of his argument, but Judge Gilbert found the sentencing range to be 168 to 210 months. The government argued for a middle range sentence. Mr. Mitchell asked for a sentence of 168 months, 14 years. Judge Gilbert gave him 15 years. That's not unreasonable, given this defendant's history and characteristics. This is not an angel who is trying to overcome his addiction. This is an individual who, while on federal pretrial bond, goes out and threatens to kill a witness. This is a defendant who made statements to law enforcement officers when he got arrested in the past about harming their family and harming themselves. This is an individual who threatened in the past a former girlfriend who was
Is the judge aware of these other instances of threats?
Oh, yes, Your Honor. It was in the evidence was the police officer, Ken Imshoff, testified about a 2001 DUI arrest he made of the defendant where the defendant said to him that he was going to hit the officer in the head with a bottle and dance over his lifeless body. He was going to find out where the officer lived and take his daughter out in the field and rape the mess out of her. This is not an angel that's being portrayed here or a drug addict. This is a person with a violent history. And he also told a former girlfriend, a Rebecca Riley, who testified, who he thought was a federal witness at the time. She wasn't. But he beat her and said that he wanted to, and this is a quote, that he ought to pull the truck over and kill her and that he would like to play in my guts. I mean, this is not a angel trying to rehabilitate himself. This is a criminal defendant involved in the manufacture and distribution of methamphetamine who has a violent history. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. How much time is... I'll give you a minute, sir, if there's something you'd like to reply to.
Thank you, Judge Ripple. To work backward very quickly, number one, none of the, quote, other threats were the subject of any finding of fact by the lower court. It only had a finding of fact for the obstruction of enhancement as to the one fact, didn't deal with the other ones. The other ones were all while Jason's on meth. And after that, he completely turned his life around. Please don't let what he did on meth and what he did while on alcohol overshadow what the record makes absolutely incredibly clear. It's a man who crosses a mountain but trips on the way down. We're forgetting about the mountain. The government says it's impossible to tell. Well, you have to prove it. And the government's claimed it's related to her being a witness. But please look very carefully about the testimony about NARC and snitch. There's zero testimony that it came from Jason or that those were the actual words used. Some people, Maria doesn't know whether it was snitch or bitch, and SN isn't very close to B. It could have been pitch and a million other things. There's also testimony that they were talking to Ms. Shively, not even to Maria. We thank this court for its time and careful consideration of this case. Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel in the case. The case will be taken under advisement. There will be a change in the membership of the panel for the sixth case, so the court will rise and take a short recess.